Welcome back to 8-Bits, everybody, the show where we interview the people behind the tech. My name is Brandon Minnick, and with me, as always, is my amazing co-host, PJ Metz. PJ, looking good. How's your week?
The week, good so far. You may notice that my background is different for those of you who watch the live stream. And that's because I'm at a co-working space today because my internet was not good enough for a live stream. Which is fun. It's always fun when your internet, when you're working from home and your internet's like, oh, it doesn't work today, sorry. And normally I would have been like, hey, work, can't do the work today because the internet's out. But this is an important show and I had to find internet. So I rode my bike to downtown Orlando and I set it up here. And now I'm not in the middle, like the common area, because if I was screaming in the common area, I'm sure someone would get mad. But I'm in a little telephone booth.
Yeah, I'm glad you're able to make it. I know you've been having lots of fun with your internet provider lately.
You know, there was water in the cable line going to the house was the problem a few weeks ago.
What?
Yeah.
The coaxial cable?
The coaxial cable had water inside of it, and the technician that came out to help fix it, he was like, we'll figure out what's wrong, and a tech came out. And he unscrewed it from the splitter and he went, oh, and like water came out of the cord. And he went, oh, that happens sometimes. And I was like, it does? Apparently, he's like, yeah, sometimes a squirrel chews on the wire and there's a way for water to get in and it just floods it. That's why you've been having slow speeds. And I struggled to make like a surfing the web joke, but it didn't work. And so I was just like, oh, okay, so, all right, thank you. And he like fixed it and the internet was great after that.
Wow. See, all of this would make a lot more sense to me if you lived kind of up in the mountains in the middle of nowhere, maybe you're off the grid.
But yeah.
You're literally biking distance from downtown Orlando.
Yeah, no, I live in a very popular part of Orlando, like right next to I-4. There's lots of people around. It's a well-trafficked area. But for some reason, it's the internet cable is held together with like the hopes and dreams of orphans or something. It's just not a stable connection.
Well, on brighter side, I've got a fun announcement. We finally released our first release candidate for the .NET MAUI Community Toolkit.
Woo-woo!
Oh, man. It's been about over a year in the making. But we've been really, really working on the code for the last few months. Before then was getting all of the, basically all the political stuff done internally at Microsoft, meeting with lawyers, meeting with marketing, meeting with the documentation teams. But yeah, we've got the release candidate up. We'll push it to the first stable release next month alongside .NET MAUI. So it's really exciting. And not coincidentally, now we're getting more bug reports coming in. So
yes, of course.
Some are folks using it and finding legitimate problems. Some are folks finding, we'll say, holes in our documentation that we need to do a better job of explaining how to use it. But it's been fun. It is the community toolkit. And we have dozens of open source contributors so far. But when it's still in preview, not everybody's going to try it out. When you put the release candidate tag on it, then that's when things get real. So we pushed that last week. So I've been taking a little bit of time to celebrate. I told the team, what are we going to work on now? Because we're freezing the features while it's in release candidate phase. I was like, just relax. Like, enjoy the weekend, guys. Like, I got in a little bit of spring skiing, which wasn't good, at least not here in Tahoe. But yeah, that was my self-treat, my self-reward.
Yeah, this is a pretty big open source project here. As far as size goes, like this, because the only other thing I can think of, you've done a lot of open source stuff. You have some libraries out there. The big thing is GitHub. Why can't I remember it?
GitTrends.
GitTrends.com. GitTrends.com. So this is a much larger initiative, and like you said, you've been working on it for over a year, but it's got to feel really good to be at the finish line here. That's great.
It does. Yeah. And probably yeah, I'd say the majority of the work is getting the foundation set up. So creating our automation pipelines, the code's all open source in GitHub. So being able to leverage things like Azure pipelines to automatically build things and putting in all those rules and all kind of those guardrails so that when anybody commits code, it'll check all that stuff and kind of help nudge everybody along. And we've built a whole process, a whole workflow out on how we add new features and how we report bugs. And so it feels good. That was huge because now it's so much easier just to add code to the repo because a lot of things automated away and we're kind of protected from, well, anything, right? Hopefully. Listen,
protected, like we're safe, secure, it's totally fine. And who was I talking to? I was doing a guest lecture at a Penn State Brandywine, and it was for a class of students that were learning about like security and security features. And I was talking about the story that a lot of people know is that one time a casino was able to get hacked because of a IoT temperature device checker inside the aquarium.
Whoa. I don't know that story, but
it's a fun story. Literally Google like hack aquarium casino and it'll turn up. It's a very infamous story within security circles, but everything you think secure. And then you got to make sure that your fish had the right temperature water and suddenly you're compromised.
Very, very true. Well, speaking of fish,
this is not the beginning of a great segue, but we're going to take it anyway. And I appreciate your work on that, Brendan.
We have such an amazing guest, and I really want to bring him in. This week, we are being joined by Stephen Ludke. He's actually a longtime friend of ours, and super excited to have him on. He's the Senior Principal Technical Program Manager at Splunk, self-appointed data junkie. So without further ado, Stephen Ludke, welcome to the show.
Ba-ba-ba-ba. I'm trying to think of a
segue. Oh, you don't have your sound effects this week.
I don't know what to.
Oh, no.
I've got nothing.
Yeah, no. So Stephen wanted to say something. We don't have the sound effects. Again, co-working space. But I can. Here, I'll do
much better.
That's a good clip. We're going to clip that one and save that for posterity.
Well, Stephen, thanks so much for joining us this week. For anybody out there who doesn't know you, who are you and what do you do?
Thanks for having me. So my name's Stephen Ludke. Worked with a couple companies in my journey to tech and excited to talk to you all about it today. It really hit me by surprise. I don't think I ever had any inclination or I didn't know I was going to end up in tech, so it'll be a fun story for you all to tell you how I got here. A little bit more about myself, though. I live in Denver, Colorado. Used to be in Melbourne, Florida. That's where I met PJ and Brandon over here. Miss you both, but we're all in different places now around the country. I think I've got a newborn, so I might look a little tired. got a 3-year-old son as well, and wife and a doggo, and just living it up here in Colorado. And I'll tell you a little bit more about
we appreciate you making the time to fill everybody in. When I was chatting with Stephen about coming on the show, we originally had you scheduled for, I forget if it was last week or the week before. And when we were scheduling it, Stephen's like, that's 2 days before my wife's due date, but it should be fine. But you look great. Looks like you got at least 2 hours of sleep last night.
I'd say at least two.
that's an improvement, believe it or not. It's trending in the right direction.
Congratulations, man. You mentioned you didn't think you were gonna even start in tech. Let's go way back. What did you want to be when you grew up?
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, it all started, I think, I don't know. You never know what you really want to do, even in middle school or high school. But computers were fun, right? I did a good amount of gaming back in high school. Gosh, you know, what was it back then? I think it was Counter-Strike and some Diablo, some other StarCraft, all those fun things, right?
StarCraft 2, I think, was when we were in high school for sure, yeah.
There you go. So, yeah. And anyhow, all that told me was I like computers. My dad was a pharmacist. I worked a couple summers in his pharmacy, and it just wasn't for me. It's like people kind of yelling at you, like, I need my drugs. I need to. So when I went to college, went to University of Florida, computer engineering seemed like the right fit. I didn't know if I wanted to do software or hardware, so that's why I did computer engineering versus computer science. But it was at least, you know, in the realm of my interest. I did both some software and hardware. Really still didn't know if I wanted, by the time I graduated, I didn't know if I wanted to code or do hardware even after all that. But I did find, you know, during the last 2 years there that I was interested in more networking side of things. So at least, you know, there was a couple classes that introduced me to networking in general. And when I mentioned that to, you know, trying to get an internship, Harris Corporation in Melbourne, they first took me on and they let me be a network engineer. So that was nice. It was a, you know, let me work on some things that I was interested in, or at least thought I was interested in. Still got to code a little bit, but it just wasn't my super strong point, you know, so it was enough to be dangerous, but not to make really a full-blown career as a software engineer per se.
You might be the first network engineer, maybe even the first hardware engineer we've had on here. We typically interview a lot of folks in the software world. So how would you even define a network engineer? Like, everybody knows what Wi-Fi is, but why do you need an engineering degree to make that work? Right. Like, I just,
of course, just plug it in. It just works, right? Yeah.
I got a cable. I plug it into my computer. We're done.
Oh, that's a great question. And you just, you made me think of a funny story that, so BJ's mentioning his outages, you know, with the water seeping into the cable or, you know, whatever else was the cause. So when I went and did this job, it was for the FAA's telecommunications infrastructure. So their entire, all the aircraft control towers talking to each other, the planes, the radar, the whole entire system is one big network, right? And so being an engineer, a network engineer for that was kind of exciting. Well, where I was going with the funny story connection was we'd have outages all the time due to
the FAA has outages all the time. Oh, no.
What? So that gets into the engineering part of engineering redundancy, right? And, you know, multiple points to handle failures. And, you know, there's a lot of design and architecture that goes into it, which was really fun. I enjoyed that. But every once in a while, you get these outages that, you get the maintenance ticket and you'd see the headline of what the cause was. And every once in a while, you'd see something that'd catch your eye, like a whale ran into a fiber line. What? which happens. They hit the transatlantic lines and stuff. And, I've seen, you know, Hunter tried to shoot at some squirrels, went through something and hit like one of the, you know, they didn't mean to, but it went through like some area where they were housing equipment and knocked out one of the radars. So
I love the idea that like a ticket shows up with something specific and it's like, oh, a whale ran into the transatlantic line. It's like, do you have a video of this? Like, how do you know? Is it the same whale that keeps doing it and he's trying to like disrupt the internet?
Yeah, no, I don't know. I was always looking out for those because there's just some really random ones that would pop up and you're going, huh, I bet they didn't think about preventing it, you know, or watching out for that.
You got to have a whale guard on that line. Yeah.
And that's wild because, yeah, I think that's something we all take for granted because I don't know if a lot of people realize, like, the only way the internet works is, yeah, we have these massive cables running across oceans, like across the Pacific Ocean, across the Atlantic Ocean,
the whole ocean.
And that's literally how we do it. Like I know, I personally used to think it was all done with satellites, but now no better. I mean, satellite communication would take too long and to be too expensive, right. But yeah, we literally lay giant cables across the ocean and now we can look at cat
Send
videos online.
Cats. Yeah, that's the go-to, right? The internet's made for cats.
Peak humanity.
That was the really fun part about the network engineering side of it, though, was creating the redundancy on such a mission critical network. You know, where lives are at stake. Obviously, you know, you would have satellite comms, underground fiber, regular. You'd use what did Harris have too? Why can't I think of it now? Not RF, but like
point to point.
It's point to point, but what's the term for it? Microwave. Yeah, you know, mm-hmm. Harris had a lot of microwave. And so you have all these different networking technologies, and to make them all work where they can be redundant for, you know, every single airport. And O'Leary crew, you got it up there, microwave point to point. Having all those different technologies, making them all work together, fail over correctly, handle the bandwidth that you need, and also keep it cost effective. I think we dealt with over 300 different telecommunications companies to make the entire thing work. So it is a massive program and just super exciting to work on. And that really, one made me appreciate the whole network engineering side of things. And then it kind of started shifting me into the systems engineering, just making everything work together. And then this kind of starts leading into the overall story, which is learning that making such a massive network like that work, there's operations, there's engineering, there's finance, there's homegrown tools, there's COTS software, there's all these things that come together and hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of people working on this. And data ended up being, you know, critical for all those things. It brought it all together. How much were you paying for every single circuit? Are things up or down? What's the performance? It's just endless amounts of analysis that goes on in engineering to keep like something like that up and running. Rest assured too, I know I said outages with the FAA earlier, but there's massive redundancy that they design in there, which is pretty awesome.
Don't worry, your boing boing Wi-Fi on your Delta flight is gonna be okay, y'all. It's all good. It's all good. You'll be able to watch an episode of Boardwalk Empire, no problem. Next time you're flying from Pennsylvania to Texas, it's okay.
Well, truly, it does speak. You know, the fact that I was so surprised when you said that the FAA had outages, I think really speaks to the fact that it really doesn't. Like, you never hear traffic at Atlanta Airport was delayed 5 hours today because the network went down.
Because of DNS.
I don't think you've ever heard about that. So I think it really is a testament to the work you used to do and the team that continues to work on it and maintain it, because that is mission critical. And I can't think of a point I've ever heard of it going down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now there's a couple headlines. If you dig deep, you can find some interesting stories. I won't say any more than that, but there is some information.
Did like two whales run into the transit at the same time? Is that
exactly? And then, so let's say you had, you know, you have a bunch of different kinds of redundancy, but This is life. This is nature, right? Where you had two whales hit a line. Sure, we'll use that as failure number one. And then failure number two at the same time might have been a train derailment, like crashed into some colo or something. And the co-location facility, that's like where you house a lot of telco equipment. Failure number three might have been they were doing maintenance that week, replacing equipment. So you were already in a maintenance window. It's the perfect storm effect, right? So I think their goal is something like 5 nines of availability or something, or it's five or six. It's pretty
five.
You can't go down, right? It's just the way it is. But there are things that no matter how many levels of redundancy you have. If you have that perfect storm of stuff happening, and it's wild to see it happen.
I'm sure it's this mix of like exciting and like terrifying at the same time. You're like, oh my, like this is the most serious work I've ever had to do right now. Let's turn on the coffee machine and let's get to it.
Yeah. Without going into the crazy details of it, because I probably can't talk about it, out of the seven years I was there, there was one day I walked in and you just walked into the door, and we always have a monitor of every single plane in the air and everything else and like what's going on. It's like a command center, a knock.
Yeah.
And you walked in, you just go, oh. You know.
Here we go.
Cancel your plans.
That's like, right.
I'm coming home late.
That's right. I will not be making it home for dinner. See you sometime eventually.
Yeah. And that said, there's stuff that it not even in our control, right? This like perfect storm of just all events somehow happen at the same exact time. And you're like, that just doesn't happen, right? But
yeah, sure enough, I know in my experience, yeah, you basically you choose your risk tolerance, right? Like you'll have backups, but do you have backups for those backups? Do you have backups for those backups? And you know, all of that costs money both to implement, to maintain. And so eventually, again, this is just in my experience. I never worked on the FAA, but yeah, you essentially get all the engineers in a room and you go, okay, we're going to have redundancy here. We're going to have geolocation redundancy, where maybe we do things on two separate sides of the country in case a tornado or a storm happens. And what's everybody think? Is everybody comfortable with that?
Is this enough? Is this safe enough?
Yeah, but then hopefully finance is sitting there saying, yo, that's a great design, but sorry.
Yeah. Listen,
we can afford two of these.
Yep, exactly. Amazing. No, that was the everyday problem that we worked on. I mean, it was always constantly figuring out the best design for the most cost-effective way to do it, right? That could tolerate that amount of risk. So
both that's both good. Of y'all came from this background of doing something totally, 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 totally different from what you're doing now. You both worked at Harris. That's how y'all met. I was a tertiary member of the people in Melbourne because I was a high school teacher. So I didn't meet y'all through the work. But it's amazing when you talk about what you used to do, Stephen. And like, Brandon, I think about you, and you used to work on like communication stuff as well. It's like, this is such a big shift for both of you. So like, how do we get from Harris and working on network engineering and system engineering to where you are now at Splunk?
Yeah. So let's see, I think it was 7-8 years at Harris. And like I said, it eventually started turning into, to make the best decision on something, it required compiling and analyzing data from engineering, from ops, from finance all at the same time. All those teams seem to work separately. So for me, I had a really awesome time just bringing those data sets together using some of our traditional tooling. And once they saw that, hey, this guy really likes to just mess around with data and he comes up with great insights. So let's make him do all of our BI stuff. And so then they kind of shifted me to continue doing systems and network engineering, but also managing a lot of our business intelligence, like back end. And I was also doing the front end, creating the reports, just because I was finding a way to correlate things and answer hard questions that they weren't able to answer before. Then one day, a good friend of mine, Nate McCurvey, he's still at Splunk. He was at Harris as well, and he introduced this tool called Splunk to me. He was an IT admin, and that's more back then more of a logging and IT admin tool. I was a business intelligence guy. I was like, I don't like this. What is this stupid thing? You know, so funny. I'm at Splunk and I love it now, but
I hate it. Now it's good.
So he said, hey, just give it a shot, right? Give it a shot. And so I played with it more and more. And eventually I found out that I could do, without making a long story short, I could do stuff in way more real time that BI was. I could run reports way too slow. And operations loved the fact that I could give them information from finance and engineering and maintenance like this. And then just correlating a ton of horrible, dirty data sets BI needs structure, and you got to sit there and just clean and munge and manipulate data all day long if you're going to try to make it work. And no one could really create an effective solution because of that. I found with Splunk, I was able to just do it really easily, really fast, and just find ways to start saving them. Like, oh man, it was like millions of dollars instantly, just buying, being able to correlate data, and then alert on it and do it in real time and just kind of bypass some of the traditional barriers of databases. So that got me into Splunk. And then
if you don't mind, we should, what is Splunk?
Oh, yeah.
This is a great question, and it's not because I'm a little confused. Thanks, Brandon. This is for our listeners, for sure. For sure.
Yeah, you know, this has always been a fun one, too, to say, what does Splunk do? Because I swear, to this day, we still struggle with it. Most people know Splunk, if you've ever heard of it or the tool. It's going to be like a logging aggregation tool. So if you have a bunch of systems, and whether it's IT or security related, you're collecting all this logging from them to figure out, you know, why did something go down, or am I having a breach? So basically every single computer system or network switch or whatever generates logs. Splunk is like an aggregator of all that, allows you to just search through that data, alert on it if you see something, you know, try to be more proactive if something's going to fail in the future, and then also visualize it all in the same place. So I always say that the pitch for most folks is, and why I liked it so much, was all this time you spend on ETL, like extract, transform, and load your information in, then you need a visualization tool, then you need an alerting tool, then you have all these different tools you put together. Splunk is just one platform to say, data goes here, I can search it, visualize it, alert it, do ML on it, do whatever I want with it, and I don't have to put a bunch of other tools together. I like to think, too, I feel like I'm in the Matrix just when I look at stuff going through Splunk. I used to be at customers that ingest petabytes of information a day, and you have this interface that allows you to make sense of that, all that streaming real-time data.
This is one of my favorite stories in just business in general. Like, you started out as a user of it, and you started out first off like not wanting to use it. Then you tried it, you fall in love with it. And all of this had to happen because you fell in love with data as part of your job. But now you're like, man, I really like it. And I bet you become like an in company evangelist, where you're like, hey, is anyone else using Splunk? It's really good. I want you to try it. That eventually leads to, did you reach out to Splunk? Did Splunk reach out to you? Was it this thing where you were like kind of a community evangelist for them? How did this work out?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. So the more work I did with them, eventually there was a users conference that they had, and they seek out like really fun, good use cases. Well, considering most use cases back then were just IT related or security related, mainly IT. When they saw that I was doing stuff around tracking aircraft and doing finance, you know, saving all this money in financial operations and engineering, they're like, what in the heck are you using Splunk for? So they invited me to go, you know, do a presentation at their conference. And once I went there, the rest is history, because you meet all these people, you see this new world of, the biggest thing for me was I was using Splunk to solve some amazing problems at Harris, but for one company and one problem, essentially. Whereas I was like, what if I could do this for a ton of customers in every industry? And I was like, that, you know, that sounds pretty appealing. So they, you know, they eventually, Nate went first, cause he kind of went through a similar trajectory as I did. I held back, just because I had such an amazing boss at Harris. To this day, one of the best mentors I ever had. It was really tough to leave him. But eventually it felt like it was the right thing to do. And I didn't know how to get I didn't know what role to do. So this is kind of this new, hey, I didn't even know what tech was at this point. I mean, was tech even a term 10 years ago, like when this happened? The first thing that the only way I saw to get in was to do consulting because they needed people to be in the field. They had openings there and they're like, look, you already know how to use Splunk pretty well. Yeah, your Linux isn't the best because you didn't, you know, you're not an IT administrator like Nate was, but you can learn it, right? And I'm like, sure. Yeah. I mean, I can navigate my way around. I'm just not an expert.
Yeah.
So they said, sure, you're hired. Like, let's go. And I also didn't, I mean, I don't take this career advice from me, but I did take a step in role to get in. I just said, hey, I don't need this level. I'll go one down. I just want the job. I just want to go do this. Right. Turned out that was the best decision I ever made. I mean, it just career skyrocketed after that. I mean, I owe Splunk a lot. Changed my life.
I would say also Splunk owes you a lot for showing up at a conference with an interesting use case. Like, you were out there doing good stuff. So Splunk did a lot of great stuff for you. Absolutely. You're correct. But you've done a lot of work too. So don't undersell yourself there, Steven.
I was lucky enough that the CEO of Splunk at the time came in and watched my presentation, and because it was just such an interesting, like, different use case. So that I'm sure that helped too. And they were just growing a lot at the time. I mean, that was right where a lot of, you know, tech companies these days, you find them in that perfect spot. And Splunk was one of those at the time for sure. I missed IPO by, I don't know, 6 months to a year or something. And that wasn't a problem at all because we were on, I mean, sure, I don't know if things would be different, but all I know is it was just a freight train of growth from the day that I started, even after IPO, and it's just been awesome since. So I started in professional services. That's really where it led. I went into the consulting side, learned what I needed they threw me in the fire pretty quick. I think I was out of in 1 week or something. And it was pretty stressful because there were, back then we only really had our core platform. And if people were using it for cybersecurity, well, you kind of needed to be a subject matter expert in cybersecurity and all the different, you know, endpoints and network, type, which was okay. I kind of knew some of that from network engineering, right? And then the IT side, you just had to pick that up as well and just solve problems on the fly right at the customer. But it was, I think at the end of the day, you were there. Splunk was such a great tool. And if I left a customer and they were just like, dude, you don't understand how much time you've saved me now, or you've changed my, this is awesome. And that made me really love professional services and consulting for a product you love, especially if your customers love it too. So that was 8 years ago. Yeah, eight to 9 years ago. And then it's an interesting trajectory, I think, from there. But I'll take a break here if you...
Yeah, this is actually a perfect time. We're going to cut to a commercial real quick, and we'll come right back after this short ad break.
Hi, if you're hearing my voice, that means you've been listening to or watching 8-Bits with Brandon and PJ. And we're here to talk to you about your product and how it can help you in your life by do whatever your product does. So if you're an avid listener of the show or you watch us on Twitch, then you'll know that
your product
is right for you.
That's right. We are looking for sponsors. So if you would like to sponsor us on 8-Bits, shoot us an email, hello@8bits.tv, and we'll respond back and get something going. Now, House, before the break, we were diving into all the cool things that Splunk can do. And actually, before we even started the show, you shared with us some really cool links, some blog posts, some dashboards that you've built. And no pressure, but I'm curious, would you mind sharing those with the 8-Bits community? Because I'm seeing we have Ukraine crypto donations, dashboards, dashboards to monitor Ethereum. Where should we even start?
That's the hard part. So maybe a little context into it, and then I'll just jump to some random ones. And I have like a little deck of some screenshots I can show, because logging in and doing each one might be kind of tough. But after professional services, after a few years of that, I went into tech marketing, and that got into demo building and trying to deliver Splunk's story and capabilities to our analysts, our investors, at our conferences. I built stuff for our keynotes. Actually, a really funny story there. One of the best keynotes, stealing something from Silicon Valley. If anyone watched that show, and they... how do I keep this PG rated? at the end of the first season, they had
the in and out algorithm.
Yeah, so I have to give Nate a shout out on this. He came up with the idea, and then we, for a keynote conference, maybe it was 2015 or something. No, 16 or 17. Anyhow, we made it so it was like a real time demo with people in the audience where they had their phones. And they were going to generate real-time telemetry to show off our new product features. Like, we were going to collect it all from 10,000 people in the audience. And so we had it so the accelerometer from every phone in the audience was going to send that data to Splunk and show it in real time, like all the metrics and how hard people were shaking it and whatever. And we made it so like, hey, the harder you shake, we'll get the meter up. Watch the dashboard I built, and it will shoot. Splunk's mascots are ponies. It will shoot ponies out of a cannon and hit people in the ass. we tried to get some of the Silicon Valley folks to actually make a commercial out of it, with limited success. Either way, somehow that passed legal back then, and we had the entire audience like shaking their phones. Yep. We had a different name for middle out algorithm, I think. And we shot stuff. We shot stuff into the audience when.
This is amazing. Thing. So, but like, you were able to like people were able to like log in. You had access to the accelerometers. Everyone was shaking their phones like a can of soda. I got you on the PG, and like eventually it made something happen. So this was how you were showing off what you were making. So this is like. This is amazing. This is really cool. But
tech
these dashboards and that's fun. So you're making like dashboards and stuff like that now, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's dashboards being the front end of all of what Splunk can do, but essentially just making it easy to collect any, we call it machine data. So whether it's coming from your phone or a Nintendo or a computer or an IoT device, Splunk collecting that and then just being able to build a lot of cool visualizations from it is where I just really is my favorite thing to do. It's what I did for tech marketing and help build keynote demos and build stuff for customers and so on. And what that turned into was not just doing our traditional use cases, but all of these, I guess I was kind of an evangelist for all non-core use cases at Splunk. So what could use Splunk? IoT devices, aircraft, people shaking their phones, water treatment plants, whatever. We even used to do track days at Splunk, and we built some stuff to track all the telemetry from cars in real time and use ML to predict what car it was just by the speed and the RPM and the, it's just so much fun. And so a lot of the stuff I built was just all getting that data in, making sense of it, and then building the front end in Splunk or the dashboards to show all that information in real time. So let's see, I guess I can go through a couple fun ones here, and it's a little more boring that they're screenshots, but it'll allow us to just see more than me logging in and doing one at a time. Let's see if I can figure out how to share my screen here.
There's a little box with an arrow on it that should be share your screen.
Oh, good old Mac OS. We got, do you want to give it permissions?
There you go. Say yes, say yes. I remember while you're finding that, I remember when the world was doing when we were trying to figure out how we were going to deal with COVID, and we ended up doing all these Zoom happy hours. I remember you built a COVID tracking dashboard, and I remember it was maybe like 2 weeks into the official pandemic, and you're like, "Oh, I have a dashboard. Y'all can like track stuff, just put it in your state. And I was like, you built this? And you were like, yeah, no problem. I hadn't even started learning to code yet. And I was like, this seems like the most complicated thing I can conceive of in the entire world. I am going to pull your screen and go ahead. You can pull up that screenshot.
Did that work? I didn't have to exit.
You're good.
Hey, oh, nice. Look at that.
Yeah. So there's this just, eventually I'm going to make some of this stuff more public, but I've got to figure out which ones I can and can't share. Most of the ones in here are all good, but let's see. There's so many fun use cases in here. The one just splunking the garden. So I had some humidity sensors and water sensors and, just trying to not kill plants. And so I had just some alerts on when to harvest, when to plant, so on. I think this is, oh man, I'm giving you guys tab hell up there. Let me get rid of that. So this was one where if I brought all the stuff I was doing at home together, like all of my energy, so every single break being monitored in real time, my water usage, AC heat, my network, I mean, every single thing around my networking side of things. I think PJ was telling you earlier about how I let the companies know when there's an outage. I send them like a report from Splunk saying, hey, man, you've only given me 96% uptime this week. I don't like it. So,
and for the cars folks, and just, folks listening along, we're looking at this just insane dashboard. I'm seeing information about, looks like, weather events with rain and lightning and temperature and all of your home usage.
It is a massive amount of data, but it looks so good. It's like clear. The color is fantastic. It's easy to read. And it looks so well done. Like it's, I mean, obviously you're a professional. You've been doing this 10 years. So good.
This is where I'll get on my little bit of Splunk bias, but it was one of the first tools where I found I could have this freedom of, because the data behind this is really the hardest part. It's getting real time data, because this dashboard, if I did pull it up, all the stuff is moving. And being able to get it in there and then still display it nicely is just a tough thing to do with a lot of the tools out there. And so Splunk just made it really easy. And once I figured out how to do it, you know, that's where like all these concepts just started taking off. This one that looks kind of like a space one, in one of our newer dashboarding frameworks, you can create your own visualization. So stuff that's not out of the box, like these hexagons, you know, that's just taking an SVG, importing it in, and now you can program any Splunk search to it to change the colors. And that goes a long way. It's like, hey, I can create anything I want from an SVG and tie real-time searches to it. I love it. Right. Another example, this was like tracking satellites, and I actually get the IS or the International Space Station feed and some other ones to just mess around with some basic orbital mechanics. I'm not an expert there.
Just messing around with data from the International Space Station. Oh, yeah. Like,
are
a normal,
you allowed
data
to have
job?
This data?
For any F1 fans, I've designed some stuff for their esports team. And then even, I'm not sure exactly what some of the do on the actual team, but the esports team is using a lot of the data from the real race and then their simulators to build a lot of analytics around how to get better. So this has been a super fun project to, you know, definitely not in the normal Splunk IT security use case, but again, it's just all data. It's just a lot of moving data. And so it fits in pretty well if you've got a creative mind to you. Yeah. And then, you know, these days I work on our blockchain team, and which is awesome I just love data and I love new use cases. Well, there's a ton of public available data on Ethereum and Bitcoin, all of your public blockchains. So I've built a lot of stuff around, one, keeping blockchains up and running, so the infrastructure aspect of it, and then also what's happening on the ledgers or the blockchains themselves. So there's just all sorts of really fun things that we've built there. PJ, you mentioned COVID.
Yep.
When that first came out, we we have a Splunk for Good is what we call it, so we tried to help contribute to that analytics space of tracking all that information, predicting things. We even had an ask for some of our customers when they wanted to go back to work, like, could you help build COVID readiness, you know, show how our facilities are doing, how many people have walked in, you know, like just badge tracking and things like that. So that was a lot of fun. And this is more of the infrastructure related side. I know the viewers who can't see this, you're probably saying, man, you're showing a lot of dashboards. And I've probably gone through like 20 dashboards now. So I think the point is lots of different use cases. And honestly, my transition from the BI space to this was, what if you had no limits of what you could design visually, because you're being held back by some data problem or correlating things, or you can't do it in real time. It's been so nice to not have those barriers with Splunk. I know that's kind of a pitch for it. And look, there's other tools out there. There's open source alternatives, there's other things, but Splunk was just the best tool that I've come across in this journey of creating these kinds of
it's amazing
concepts. Yeah. And these use cases just go on, from tracking wildfires and helping public sector to wine cellars, and again, doing the race car tracking and skiing. I think I tracked, Brandon, you would have loved this one. I used to bring an IoT sensor with me when we'd ski, and I could look on my phone and look at, you know, stuff happening in real time. Now there's an app for that, but this was, you know, 6-7 years ago when I created those things. So
this is amazing.
Yeah.
So this, Stephen, we have go ahead. I took your screen off. It's back to us. What is this Splunk, this dashboard you've built that is about Ukraine crypto activity? What is that about?
Yeah, this was so I think if you posted the link in there, hopefully it's still up and running. Now that I'm on pat leave, it might break without me. Again, being on our blockchain team now, Ethereum is one of the public ledgers that we can do analysis on. And so we found, what a great data set to do examples on of creating analytics on something in real time and responding to things. So, you know, COVID was one, and we thought Ukraine would be another one, because you see headlines on Twitter and other things. There's like, hey, 40 million has already been donated to the Ukraine government within, you know, like a week. That's, you know, that's substantial, right? So we thought that, hey, let's track that. Let's look for, interesting activity and other things that happen on the ledger, because it's a very, very interesting data set. We also, one of the nice things with Splunk is correlating all sorts of data, because it's all, let's see if this is the right word, implicitly joined on time. If you think of the old database days where you had to have a key and that was the only way you could get two data sets in the same place and overlay things and look for aggregate, you know, analytics. And with Splunk, it's just everything you put into it, no matter where it comes from or what it looks like, no matter the format, it's joined by timestamp automatically. So you're never doing like I got to join on a minute granularity, or I got to join on 10 minutes or 1 second or whatever. It's just all done for you. And when you think about that, it's like an automatic join. So news articles, Twitter feeds, the Ethereum ledger analytics, it just gets put onto a dashboard. You can overlay both sources and not have to ever really worry about joining them if they didn't have a key to join them together. There's a lot of patterns you can find in data just by time alone. And so that's, our inspiration for that one was like, hey, let's compare news articles with the crypto data, with price feed data, and then also start looking for scams, because, you know, unfortunately, a lot of stuff in the crypto side of things and NFTs these days, while there's a lot of good, there's also a lot of bad that comes with it. And we could start predicting real quick, just by watching address activity and other things, that, hey, this is looking like a scam's happening here. And we should have blogged more about it, but legal and other, I mean, I don't know, that's kind of a hard thing to. I don't know. You didn't necessarily know what was going on in Ukraine just yet. So it's kind of a sensitive subject to really.
Yeah, absolutely.
Make too many assumptions is kind of.
Yeah, absolutely.
But
yeah, I could see that. Especially if something got labeled as a scam because it tripped whatever threshold and it wasn't. And then Now we just caused a big mess. But on the flip side, catching the scams, also super valuable.
Yeah.
So that was just a really fun. And, you know, I think this is the where things are going today is we can't wait a week or even days to go do analytics on something. I don't want to have to wait. Can I look at something, pull in new data feeds, create visualizations and alerts and like operational analytics on it like this? Like how fast can we do that? And so that was one of our examples of just that's one thing I love about blockchain data is just it's public, it's fast. There's a ton of data. There's tons of blockchains. They don't even have really a good solution yet to correlate all chains. And so I'm in a fun spot where these days they're just letting me, you know, I'm like, give me as much data as
possible. I want all the data. Give me everything you got.
Yeah.
It just sounds you're so excited about data. That's what makes this job seem to work so well for you. You really are passionate. You've been at Splunk, you said, about 9 years, and you're still excited about it, and you're still loving it. You're still just getting really jazzed about it. So like, it's really cool to see your passion, and it's something you weren't like, you know, you weren't 13 going, I just really like data a lot. It was, there was something you found later, and you've turned it into something that benefits you in so many ways. It's a job, it's a career, it's kind of a hobby. You seem to be doing it for fun sometimes.
Oh yeah. So, I probably to my wife's demise. She's like, you nerd.
I'm building a dashboard for our new child. We're going to track everything.
There were some thoughts around that.
It's fun to see you be creative in a way that a lot of people wouldn't consider creative. When we talk about creative and creativity, it tends to be around like, you know, the arts or problem solving. But your creativity is really in a unique sort of subset of problem solving. And it's just really cool to see. Like, it's, you excite me, Stephen. It's exciting to see you get excited about this stuff. So fantastic.
I'm excited for Splunk. If Splunk's ever looking to sponsor a podcast, we'd be happy to have him on board.
But, we will talk about Splunk all the time.
But I love, PJ, what you're saying about the passion, because I can feel it too. It's coming through. Your passion's coming through the screen, Stephen. So I'm curious, what would your advice be to folks who are either new to the industry or want to break into the industry? How can they get to a spot where you are, where they can do what they love and be super passionate about it and look forward to going to work?
Yeah, I mean, it does come back to that kind of last stint at Harris where I just started finding something that like, hey, I think I'm kind of good at this thing for once. I found something that I might be able to really bring some value on this data side. And so the more I pushed that, the more that I explored, well, what is the best out there? What are the products I can look for? And again, I didn't actually like Splunk at first, but I gave it a chance. And that at least got me in the door. And then from there, you know, I didn't talk too much about this, but it was like professional services to tech marketing to almost going back into product management / data engineering. I was doing a little bit of both. And that was just because once you find something you're so passionate about or a product, you can change roles, I think, much easier. Again, because you're behind the product. So foot in the door with just the consulting side, which was scary, but they needed help. And I was like, I know how to use the product because I love it. I'll learn everything else I need to. And then from there, really moving horizontally, I think in most tech companies, I know Splunk, it was relatively easy, but most companies moving horizontally is not too hard to do. I think a lot of companies are healthier when they promote that. So my advice is, look for something you're passionate about. Go to the conferences. That's the easiest way to just meet people, do some presentations. You get seen. And I think any recruiter is going to love the fact that you did any sort of presentation, right, or something around the product. And find your way to get your foot in the door. It might not be your ultimate role, but I didn't know that consulting was going to be my ultimate role. I mean, I think I did 2.5 years of that before I went to tech marketing, and 4 years of that was awesome. But then after that, I said, I don't think this is my final role either, but I know it's still data right now it's still Splunk. What can I do next at this company that will satiate my appetite?
Yeah, that exploration is such a great theme and idea. And when you're in college, when you're in a boot camp, when you're being self-taught, when you're doing all of this and you really only kind of see software developer, you only see engineer, there is a huge open funnel behind every career that is so much more. And Stephen, thank you so much for being on the show. We have loved having you here. It's been fun just to like have us all in the same room together, even if it's a virtual room. Of course. And this has been a fantastic episode. I've loved it. Brandon, any final words or what have you got? Do you love him? Do you love Stephen too? Because I love Stephen.
We all love Stephen. Stephen, for anybody that wants to follow along on your adventures, your blog posts, your dashboards, where can folks on the internet find you?
It's on my to-do list to start getting some more of this work out there. But for now, some of the information will get out there at the Twitter handle at Arbiter of Data. Look for more in the future. Yep, there's a blog link. I did more back when I was in tech marketing, but I think once I come back from leave, they're asking me to start writing about a lot more of the stuff that I've been creating anyways. So both the Twitter handle and then that blog link, you can take a look at that or reach out to me directly. I'm always happy to answer questions and talk about anything data. It's just, again, it's my passion. And it doesn't necessarily need to be Splunk. It's just data. So I think that blog, it says S. Ludke. You can reach out to me at sludke@gmail.com if you wish.
All right. And that's sludtke@splunk.com. And you can find his blogs at splunk.com as well. And we want to thank you all for tuning in to 8 Bits. And we will see you all next time.